You're listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast. Now, your hosts, Igri and Cynic.
Hear me and rejoice, because you are listening to the Cynic Radio Podcast, and I'm your host, Cynic. Joining me, as always, my team of Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Igri and Ryan. And on this week's show, we review the latest offering from the MCU, the record-breaking, epically soul-crushing Avengers Infinity War, because we are the Cynic Radio Podcast, just three people near middle age who can't stop talking about superhero films. And if you're listening, chances are you completely identify. Like, listen, subscribe. Most importantly, never snap your fingers in anger. I've been counting down the days since they announced this movie. And it's here. It's finally here. The whole Marvel Universe bands together to face off against the mad Titan Thanos. Who lives? Who dies? Did the movie pay off after 10 years? Let's find out.
It's been 19 movies and 10 years have passed since Tony Stark stood in front of the world and announced, "I am Iron Man." And movies and the box office and Marvel hasn't been the same. I mean, they've completely dominated. How hard were you anticipating this movie?
You said it right there. 19 movies, 10 years. All of that ties to right here, right now. I mean, yeah, there were a couple of missing characters, but, you know, what I think I saw, somebody said that there were like 70 like named characters in this movie, and most of them were like of the hero variety. I mean, it's crazy the amount of stuff that they put into this. And my anticipation going in, just with all of the press, all of the trailers, everything going in, the very first trailer that dropped, I wasn't all that impressed with, but everything after just got me just amped. I mean, Josh Brolin alone, putting him in Thanos and like giving him that front role. I mean, what a guy, what a strong character to put out front. I couldn't be more excited. I was really amped up for this.
It's the same for me. I mean, if we boil it down to the bare essentials, Star Wars is always going to be my mainstay, but Marvel has always been a close second. And I loved how every single one of these 19 movies was just a thread to the next. So we were all building towards this. And I mean, mind you, it's amped up over the last couple of films, that the anticipation of this. But since it's been announced, this has been on my calendar. Like, I can't wait for this. I was like a kid on Christmas when I sat down in the box office, because I wanted it to work so bad, and I really believe it did. Ryan, walking into the movie, I mean, did it deliver for you?
It did deliver for what it was supposed to. As we'll get to it, there are, you know, as with anything, I think this was such a huge endeavor for the Russo brothers to pull something like this off. Is an achievement in and of itself. You know, you have all, as you mentioned, we have all these threads over the last 10 years, and to pull all these characters and stories together in an even semi-cohesive manner is a feat. And so I think it was really impressive just how surprisingly cohesive this whole thing was. So I think it delivered on being the kind of culmination of 10 years worth of movies. You know, it certainly did. But realistically, I think, and we'll get to it more, it's kind of open-ended, because obviously we still have another movie coming. And I almost think it would have been bold to make this the ending, you know, to have this end, you know, this version of the MCU would have been great. But yeah, I mean, we'll get more into it, but I definitely think it was a worthy capstone for, you know, what started 10 years ago with Iron Man.
There's just so much story to tell. And unlike other movies where this didn't feel like it needed a sequel, yes, there's more story to tell, but I think we had a pretty definitive closing at the end of the movie, where we're moving into the next story as this movie started. Perfect example, I wasn't fully aware that Lord of the Rings was going to be multiple movies, and to me, it felt like the story just stopped. We had this epic journey, and then we just stopped in the middle of it, and at that point, it wasn't a yearly sequel. It was like, oh, come back in a couple years to find out what happens, or read the book. Where this, I thought, it closed well. I don't see this as a sequel going forward, even though they're calling it part two. I see it as a brand new movie.
Well, looking at like exactly what you said, it is a brand new movie. This to me, like, you know, we were talking, you already said, you know, Star Wars, your number one. So it is with me. This is an awful lot like Empire. The Empire Strikes Back was a complete movie. But, you know, this one, like Empire, ended more on a down note. There were problems. People were in peril. There was jeopardy. But it was still a complete movie. You can sit down and watch Empire all by itself and not have to watch the next one immediately after to feel some kind of relief. The same thing with this kind of movie, where it ended that way. But hey, you can still just be its own thing. And I like that about it. I mean, yes, knowing going in that this is part one of two, you know, there's more, but they didn't cliffhanger it the way other movies have. And your Lord of the Rings example is dead on with that.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit on that Empire analogy. I think, yeah, it does end on a down note like Empire, but I think the problem is that, and this isn't me knocking the film, but this film the film kind of relies on our knowledge of the past 10 years, and it relies on us having seen almost, you know, if you were to count all the 19 movies, I'd say at least 15 of those kind of were required viewing in order to get caught up with this. So, you know, while, yeah, it ends on a down note, I think that Empire is a complete movie, you know, and that we didn't, you could watch it on its own and it stands on its own. There's enough character development and plot development in Empire to stand on its own, where I think this doesn't have the development. And again, it's not a knock on it, because the whole point of it is to be the culmination of this, you know, the last 10 years. So, and the other issue I have is, I agree that if this was the ending, if this was how it ends, I'd be happy with it. But I, you know, realistically, and this will be, you know, this will be borne out in a year, I think that this ending will likely be retconned, which then is problematic for me. So, you know, if you were to cement this as it is, and then you move forward from there, you know, fine. But the fact is that I feel like a lot of what happens and what makes the stakes so high in this would potentially be, you know, we'll go back in time and all these characters will come back. And I think that's maybe my biggest problem with the film. And that's also why I don't think it stands on its own as a full complete movie, because it's quite possible that the upcoming movie is going to erase a lot of what happens in this one.
Well, I agree with that. But at the same time, they're not going to leave billions of dollars of box office laying on the floor in ash. But we are going to lose people. I think the stakes will be equaled out as far as loss when we get to see the full picture. I do think we're going to lose quite a few people permanently. There is definitely some permanent deaths, and that leads me into my next question. Was there any shock that Loki split decision to grab the Tesseract and run cost them everything? Did the deaths of Heimdall and Loki prove without a doubt that the stakes are real this time?
Yeah, so that was kind of shock number one. Is you know, I knew there would be deaths in this movie, and I knew going in that there were, you know, there's a lot was going to happen, but to kill off two central characters to Thor Ragnarok, which you just saw not too long ago, or just came out not too long ago, I think, and Loki, who's been central to this entire universe, to kill them off in the first few minutes, let you know right off the bat that, you know, the stakes are real in this, and anybody can and will go. And, you know, I think that scene did a lot to set things up. It set up Thanos' power, the fact that he beat the shit out of the Hulk without an issue. You know, I think there was so much that happened in that initial scene that really set the stage, going forward, that again, you knew, okay, this is real, stakes are high, and, you know, we're in for a really, you know, great movie.
IG, biggest loss to the MCU, Loki, Heimdall, or Hulk's Bill Goldberg undefeated-like record? I mean, he was beaten from pillar to post by Thanos.
Oh, well, and not only did he get beaten pillar to post, but then he was like, fuck you, I'm not coming out. No, not anymore. No more Hulk. I hope you had fun while it lasted. Hulk is gone. Bye-bye. Hulk is taking a nap. Leave me alone. But honestly, probably Heimdall. Just, I mean, if you look at the things that he was able to do, you know, like running the Bifrost, and he could see everything, and just Idris Elba as a character, as an actor, not having him in the MCU anymore, just that's a big loss, because I think the amount of things that Loki has done, he's run his course, because he's been able to get out of basically every problem that's come up. So at some point, and this was an appropriate point, that it almost showed selflessness on his part, and it was a selfless sacrifice to go out the way he did. And so watching Loki go out that way, that was satisfying, but watching Heimdall go out the way he did, that was not as satisfying. That one hurt a little bit.
So what's the biggest loss, though?
Heimdall.
So the Hulk being not so incredible anymore is not a big deal to you?
It is, but Heimdall's a bigger loss. You asked which one to me is the bigger loss, and that would be Heimdall.
Ryan, do you think they avoided showing fan favorites like Korg, Meek, and Valkyrie to spare them for the possibility of Thor sequels?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a part of me that thinks maybe they didn't expect the popularity. Like, you know, if you think, okay, they're fairly big actors and names to get into this scene. You already have a scene that, you know, where you're killing off Idris Elba and Tom Hiddleston, two huge names. So there's a part of me that thinks they just didn't care to include them, and they didn't anticipate the popularity of the characters, and maybe, you know, they weren't able to get them in on reshoots. And then there's the other part that thinks, well, maybe they just saved them because, you know, we're going to need them. There are some other characters that didn't show up in the movie, and we can have them for another day. I believe that one of the Russo brothers said something along the lines of, you know, there were that there was a group that kind of escaped, and that I believe it was Valkyrie who was with the group, but he was being coy about what happened to Korg. So I'm not sure what the, you know, initial reason was, but I'm hopeful that, especially due to their own popularity and how great they were in Ragnarok, that they do show up in part four.
I think we are going to get a Thor part four, but he is the only one that has expressed interest in going forward with the character. Captain America, Chris Evans seems like he's done. Robert Downey Jr., his salary has to keep going up, so I think he's going to price himself out of any future Iron Man movies. But after this and the success of the last Thor movie, Helmsworth seemed really jazzed about the direction of the character. And I have a feeling that we will see more Thor movies going forward. So you're going to have to spare some of the cast because that ensemble that they built for Thor worked. So you needed to spare some of it. So I hope that those characters did kind of get out of harm's way.
Yeah, especially since you lost two huge characters in that one scene. And yeah, I agree. I think I did not like the first two Thor movies, and I really enjoyed Ragnarok. And I think outside of Josh Brolin, Chris Hemsworth was the best. You know, he was the star of this movie. You know, I think those, you know, it was kind of 1 and 1A as far as the stars of this movie. And it actually makes me more excited to see another Thor movie. So yeah, hopefully they find their way back.
Me too, Ryan. I mean, I wasn't a big Thor fan, and they've completely won me over with that character between the last movie and this. You know, him being the unknowing butt of the joke is just hilarious. It cracks me up every single time because he doesn't realize it. He's playing it so straight that it just works. I mean, IG, where do you feel that they've left Thor? I mean, is he in a better spot than he was previous to the first two movies?
Absolutely. I mean, how do you do better than somebody who basically is as powerful as almost any being in the universe? It is blessed with just knowledge of things that the rest of us will never have knowledge of, but the simple things in life just go right past him. He's got no idea. You know, he's unintentionally funny and just viciously superpowered and awesome to watch work at the same time. And that's the stuff that they were missing in the first stuff. Like, he was strong and he was funny, but like they were almost trying to push the humor rather than letting him be the butt of the joke. It's like he had to make the jokes, and that just doesn't fit as well for Thor because he's a Nordic mythic character, right? I mean, you need him to be almost removed from the world as it exists. He needs to not understand that stuff. He needs to be slinging his hammer and calling lightning. And then, but things that are current, he's got to be like, yeah, very, very good, morons. See you later.
IG, if you think all the way back to the, and we're going to show our age here, if you think all the way back to the Incredible Hulk Returns TV show, we saw Hulk and Thor fight side to side for the first time in 1988. And it was ridiculous. I mean, how far have we come in the last 30 years as far as CGI?
Well, and I was glued to the screen when it happened. It was the most amazing thing I had ever seen. And you watch it again now, and it does not hold up at all. It is so bad to watch now. And that doesn't say anything about Lou Ferrigno, because the man is great. And he gave us Thor, and not Thor, Hulk, and Hulk's voice. Lou Ferrigno's not doing the voice anymore, which is unfortunate, but I don't know if Lou Ferrigno even wants to do it anymore. That being said, you know, where they have come, you can't even tell anymore realistically that Thor isn't a real thing running around on the screen. That's how far CGI has come. It is hard to tell the difference between reality and CGI. I mean, and they are just throwing money at this to make sure they do that, because obviously, I mean, they put a lot of money in Justice League, and Henry Cavill looked awful. So you're throwing money in the right places. Marvel just does it right. They'll CGI. I mean, then they flow between CGI and not CGI on the same character in the same scene, like without cutting away from them. And you can't tell where the cut
look
is.
Look at Thanos. I mean, how far has CGI gone since the first time that we saw him in Guardians to now? I mean, he looks like a living, breathing being. The facial expressions, the movement, the fight scenes. I didn't get a hint of it not being real. What do you think, Ryan?
I'll compare it to Snoke, only because that's the most recent big CGI character that I can think of. I think that overall he was a much better job. I think they got the movements right. They got kind of the physics right. Where with Snoke, it was just something seemed off. The only difference I would say there is the face was not quite as realistic as I felt maybe Snoke's face was. So like when you got the close-ups on it, it was almost there, but just not quite. Something didn't quite work, you know, 100%. It was fine. It just wasn't, you know, for being the main villain in the movie, I wanted a little bit more realism, and it just wasn't quite there, but it didn't distract me or didn't, you know, take me out of it. And again, I think that as far as like the physics on the fight scenes, and then when you compare it to the first version of him and even the version in Guardians, like it's light years ahead, and still it's impressive to get a main character who does have some of the big emotional beats be a CGI character and be done so well and convincingly. So I think they did a great job. Wasn't perfect, but a very, very good job with the character design.
They're getting closer though. But we take Thanos, Ryan, who's the most powerful villain we've ever seen, MCU or not, and he's also surrounded by his Black Order. Do you think that just about any of them could have been a main villain in any other MCU movie?
Yes and no. I think I'm what's the first guy's name? The guy, the telekinesis guy. So he was great. I love the performance. I love the character. I loved his powers and his kind of use of it and his kind of like almost disdain for everyone, but kind of this casual disdain for everyone. I thought it was great, and it kind of sucked when he was like blown out and you could see that he was really dying. I was kind of disappointed because I thought he was great for the like short period he was in. I think besides him though, the rest of the Black Order just didn't hit for me. I think they looked good for the most part. But I just feel like they didn't work. They seemed I didn't quite know what their powers were. And then it was like, and this was a big gripe I had with the movie was that, you know, there were times where so you have Vision and Scarlet Witch are two of the most powerful characters in the MCU, you know, to date, you know, outside of Thanos, and they best them. Great. But then Black Widow and Okoye, who are great, are besting humans, are besting them. So it's like none of it made sense that there were moments where like they were beating two powerful beings, you know, superhuman beings, and then in the next moment they're getting bested by humans was just weird. And that was a little bit of a nitpick I had that I didn't know what their powers were, and sometimes I don't know what Vision and Scarlet Witch's powers are either, but it's like I didn't know what the powers were, and then it was kind of inconsistent as far as like who could fight who, because I just feel like if you can best Scarlet Witch, then Black Widow's got nothing on you. It shouldn't be a fair fight. So that was a little bit of a kind of nitpick on my end.
Those fights were kind of one-on-one. Vision was injured. It seemed like Proximo, she always came in and attacked when Scarlet Witch was distracted. I like the fact that they were strong enough that nobody beat them one-on-one. Everybody needed help. You know, it had to be a two or three on one fight for them to kind of last. I enjoyed them very much. And I wasn't really aware of them because I read the comics so long ago. And I guess they even actually come in later comics. They're a bigger deal. They could have been a little more talky, a little more fleshed out. But and I did like Maul a lot. I thought he was a great villain. I loved his banter with Doctor Strange. But they really were, I mean, some of the strongest villains that we've ever seen. And I really think they stand head and shoulders above some of the stuff that we've seen in other movies. IG, what did you think of the Black Order?
I absolutely agree with you that, I mean, especially Ebon Maw could have been a standalone villain. I think them as a group, as a villain group, would have been an amazing movie. But, you know, Ebon Maw's role basically as the herald of Thanos, where he shows up and tells you, hey, Thanos is going to come kill all of you now. You should feel honored because he came here just for you. It gave me terror, dread, and humor all at the same time, because just the way he was going about things and like people hucking things at him, and he just stands there nonchalantly, slices them in half with his mind, and the things just fly around. Everything he was doing, I was just captivated, just staring at the screen. I almost needed somebody to come by with little spray bottles and re-moisten my eyes because I just didn't want to blink. There was so much to see. And again, CGI characters that are done really well. I mean, they were able to show that they had been around, been through some stuff. There were scars and age and other things on these characters. I mean, one of the things they've done in CGI is they've started doing that. Like they'll express more emotion. They'll show age. They'll show damage. And I like that. Not everything is clean and crisp and beautiful and new. Things show like they've been through stuff. So the fact that the Black Order is there, they've probably earned their spot to stand next to Thanos.
I would just say that outside of Maw and outside of Proxima Midnight, I felt like the others were, you know, like a slightly better version of like Abomination, you know, like they were just kind of overpowered, but I didn't quite know what they were capable of. Just kind of monsters. The design seemed a little lazy. So I think I agree with you guys that especially with Ebony Maw and Proxima Midnight, I think they were done really well and the design looked good and I liked the characters. But I do think the rest of the Black Order gave me vibes of kind of, again, just kind of another big, you know, monster there to be foil for the heroes, but not, you know, a serious threat.
Now, understand, though, that Marvel has done that before because you just brought one of them up because the big bad in The Incredible Hulk was the Abomination. Yeah. So they've done this, you know, they're not the big bad. They are like servants, pawns, if you will, of the big bad. So having them as not even necessarily all secondary, like past Eben and Proxima, they're tertiary at best. So it's okay to have that fluff there because you got to have other things for the heroes to beat up.
Well, I believe that they're basically all gone, but maybe they probably should have spent some time and some forethought and brought them in other movies so we could have got familiar with them. So we could have been like, oh, that was the guy that screwed Quill up during Guardians or something along those lines where there was some familiarity because you throw four brand new villains and really only two of them talk. Kind of hard in that amount of time to get familiar with them. And you're right, Ryan, we don't know their skill set other than they had a staff and a spear and they could stand toe to toe with Vision. But other than that, we didn't have much context with them. Although visually, I thought they were very cool. They all looked kind of different. They all moved differently. Obsidian definitely looked like a complete powerhouse. So I like the way they were done. I agree. We probably could have got a little more context. But context aside, IG, for me growing up, some of the biggest and my most favorite things in comic books were when heroes met heroes for the first time, because there was usually a misunderstanding, some sort of fight, and then they came together to fight the villains. But the interactions between both heroes and villains in this were some of the things I was looking forward to the most. They always interested me. Strange didn't see eye to eye with Stark right away. Quill had a little bit of hammer envy when he met Thor. What were some of the highlights of these first meetings for you in the movie?
Well, those two are great. Peter Parker meeting Doctor Strange was hilarious to me. I mean, when he said, "Hi, I'm Peter," and he's like, "I'm Doctor Strange." Oh, we're using made up names. I'm like, except that it's not, you know, he is Doctor Strange. So it just, but, you know, I mean, Peter is always just great because he just plays it off. And the honest truth is he's probably, you know, supposed to be playing between a 15 and a 17 year old. And while at some time in the history of mankind, there have probably been 15 to 17 year olds like that, in today's world, there are none because, you know, they have smartphones and there's tweets to be sent. So nobody's going to say anything that clever. So it sort of takes you out a little bit, but it needs to be that way for Peter Parker and Spider-Man because that's who he is. And I'm glad that they haven't taken away from that part of Peter Parker to get him more modern, more today. But I guess my favorite interaction, and it was not necessarily a new one, but was when Iron Man was standing across from Ebon Maw and they were talking to him and he's like, you know, trying to convince Banner to turn back into the Hulk, and he's like struggling and just trying to get the Hulk to come out. You see the green coming up the neck and going back down, and he just turns to him and says, "You're making me look bad in front of the wizards." I was dying when he said that.
All of those were great. I mean, I love the way Rocket took to Thor right away. I like the fact that Quill and Thor didn't get along. There was just so much great meat there that it felt almost rushed to me. Like, I wanted to see more of that. I wanted to see more interact. So there was so much more that could have been done there. And I love the dynamic between Tony Stark and Peter Parker. Just can't get enough of that. One of the biggest travesties about Sony having Spider-Man was Spider-Man works best when he is surrounded by other heroes that he can play off of. It's nice to see him kind of quip a little bit with the villains, but it's always funny that for his comebacks or him just teasing relentlessly the heroes around him. So now that we finally get to see that in a full group setting, it just makes him feel more like the Spider-Man that jumped out of the comics. Ryan, did you happen to notice that as Thanos' powers grew, as he got each stone, it fell into place, he would use that particular stone to defeat the next challenger? I mean, he used the space stone to stop Loki from assassinating him. He used the reality stone to defeat the Guardians. And he used the time stone to undo Scarlet Witch's attempt to stop him from getting to Vision.
Honestly, I didn't notice it while it was happening, but then after the fact it was brought up, and it really was a great use of that, because I think, you know, one of the other challenges of the, you know, of understanding the Infinity Stones is understanding how they work. And so it was great that in each case he would, you know, we're seeing how each stone works in this world. And I do think that the way that ending, him reversing time, was beautiful. I think that was brilliant. You know, that he thought the heroes had it and they were right there, and that he was able to use that, and it caught me off guard, even though I should have expected it. But he was able to make that work. You know, it set up for us, you know, it was kind of foreshadowed earlier in the movie, but I really think the use of the individual stones was really, really well done, and kind of sets things up, you know, what really brilliantly throughout the movie.
IG, you brought it up. I mean, you're embarrassing me in front of the wizards. Bruce's inability to get it up is definitely a problem. What do you think's behind it? Is it the beating Hulk took from Thanos? And does it make the Hulk seem more like his own separate being, like his own individual personality?
Well, there's a huge case there. I think, you know, the multiple personality disorder is running strong in Dr. Bruce Banner. I think that he is his own thing. And what used to trigger it was anger. Like, he got mad and Hulk would come out and take over completely, because you couldn't talk to Banner. You couldn't get the things that Banner would do when Hulk was out. So if Hulk is gone, and Hulk knows he got beat, and he got beat but good, and I think Hulk is afraid. And the thing is there is other incarnations of the Hulk where he speaks more fluently and he can actually think more like Dr. Banner. And I think maybe they're pushing this closer to that direction where, like, as we talked about other characters, like gray characters, when you're talking in The Walking Dead, I think there is actually a gray Hulk that comes later. And the gray Hulk is smart and able to do all these other things. And that might be leading toward this direction, where the only way to get Hulk to come out is to get Hulk to be smart as well, because his fighting style is pure brute force as the Hulk, right? There's no tactic. There's no, if I come around this side, he won't see it coming. It's just run straight into the problem and beat the hell out of it, which doesn't work against Thanos, especially when Thanos has Infinity Stones. So I would hope that they would take this opportunity to advance Hulk, because I don't think we need Hulk to just be Hulk Smash anymore. I think to continue using the Hulk, we're going to have to take him further into where the Hulk ended up. At least that's what I see.
You know, when you consider that he was the Hulk for a really long time, you know, we learned in Ragnarok that he was essentially the Hulk for an extended period. And so while they, you know, the two personalities or two, you know, may have been closer to the same person or kind of being controlled to an extent by the same brain, you know, very well could be that being the Hulk for so long started to really split those identities, and into two clear almost brains. And so, you know, with all the stuff that he'd been through, you know, in Ragnarok and then in the beginning of this, and then getting bested by Thanos, you know, I could see how that personality could be a little bit defeated and flustered and confused. And because it's a separate entity, you know, Banner doesn't have the control over it that he, you know, that he maybe once did. And so it's, you know, part of it is also maybe him relearning how to control and manifest the Hulk, you know, now that maybe that, you know, there just seems to be like a clear division between the two minds.
IG, speaking of the Hulk, we both watched every trailer the first day that it came out multiple times, and the Hulk was clearly shown in the Infinity Wars trailer running alongside everybody else going into the fight. Do you agree with this kind of slight dishonesty in advertising if it helps keep secrets of the film?
Unfortunately, I do. You know, I think sometimes they have to misdirect you to keep you honest. So everybody was expecting the Hulk to show up in Wakanda, and he didn't. Well, Banner was there and he tried to get the Hulk to come out. Hulk wasn't having any part of it. I liked seeing Banner in the Hulkbuster Iron Man suit. I thought that was pretty fun and cool. But, you know, we all expected to see the Hulk going into this. There was plenty of press that showed him right there. And this is not even remotely the latest movie to do this. I mean, they've been doing it almost exclusively lately, especially from Disney-owned properties. So Marvel things, Star Wars things, because if you think back to Rogue One, they had scenes in the trailers that ended up nowhere near the movie in Rogue One. So Disney is doing this a little to amp you up with some things that look cool, but then a little to throw you off the scent of what's going to happen. Because, you know, the internet is full of people that can take just minor details and somehow extrapolate major plot points of the movie. So it helps out quite a bit to throw the people off sometimes. I mean, it was shown lately that about a year ago at D23, Mark Ruffalo just spoiled this whole movie. He spoiled the whole thing for everyone. And it was so ludicrous at the time that everybody's like, yeah, right. No, he did. He spoiled the whole thing a year ago.
I just saw something on the internet, which was hilarious. It was nothing but scenes of Benedict Cumberbatch stopping Tom Holland from ruining the movie for people. Like, it was just multiple interviews where he just would start going down the road and he would just get shut off, like, knock it off. You're going to get us in trouble. Ryan, let's talk uniforms. I mean, we got a healthy look at nanobite technology during Black Panther, right? And now Tony is sporting it. With the world, it's changed. There's no longer time to put on your uniform. I mean, the lack of phone boost, the lack of time. What did you think of some of the new uniforms and upgrades everybody's got? I mean, they're smooth, they're slick, they're self-healing. Do you think Peter Parker will retain the Iron Spider suit in the next Spider-Man sequel?
So I think I have two minds of it. I think thinking nostalgically and from what I remember and think of these characters as, I didn't love some of the design choices. Even Iron Man, the look was a little too organic. So, like, practically speaking, yeah, if you have the nanotechnology, why wouldn't you go with it? So, but I still would rather the look to be closer to the previous movies. So I just felt it was a little too organic, a little too shaped like regular human muscles, which it just didn't look right for me. So I didn't love that design. With the Iron Spider, again, it's too much tech. I think, you know, central to Spider-Man's character is his own intelligence and brilliance and creativity in designing his own, you know, costume. And so I was okay with the Tony Stark version from the last movie because I thought it just looked really cool. And it was new, but it still paid homage to the original design and, you know, some of the design iterations we've gotten since. I did not like the Iron Spider suit at all. You know, and I think it's too high tech. It's too metallic looking. It doesn't look like Spider-Man. The spider legs were kind of cool, but I'd give up the spider legs to have a regular looking costume. And yes, in a real world, practically speaking, when you're dealing with cosmic threats, probably want that costume, but I still like the look of what we got in Homecoming better. And I hope that they find a way to, because obviously, you know, now that he has the suit, it doesn't make sense to ever not have that suit. But I do hope they find a way to give him his old look, you know, in the upcoming movie. So yeah, I think I like the technology, makes sense, but I just didn't love some of the design choices, especially when it comes to Iron Man, and even more when it comes to Spider-Man.
I was wondering that myself, like, how are they going to close that door on the Iron Spider suit? Like, why would he go back? He's essentially Iron Man now. So why would he go back to being just regular Spider-Man? So I'm kind of hoping that they'll undo that somehow. Like, Tony tells him he's not ready for the suit, or something will happen that we'll go back to the original looking Spider-Man. One of my favorite lines from the movie was, "Oh, he's from space and he came here to steal a necklace from a wizard." I fucking love that line. But IG, between Homecoming and now Infinity War, do you kind of wish that Tom Holland and RDJ are in every movie? And let's talk a little bit about their chemistry. And what did you think of the Iron Spider suit?
Well, their chemistry is through the roof. And I don't know if it's purely writing or if they just really genuinely like each other enough that they're able to play each other that well. Because it is just stellar how well they work together. And if they could have a part in every Marvel movie, probably every Star Wars movie, and just about any other movie that comes out, I mean, you can put them old time Western movie or old English Queen Elizabeth movie. You could have Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. walk by as Iron Man and Spider-Man and say something. I'd be fine with that. You know, put them in The Incredibles. They're all owned by Disney now. That's fine, too. They are amazing and they do really well. I mean, I still think it's funny that they couldn't somehow find a late teens, early 20s Brooklyn kid or Manhattan kid to play Spider-Man, and they had to go to Europe to get one, but they did find a good one. He is so far my favorite Spider-Man, and I really did like the other ones. I thought they did just fine. Andrew Garfield, not as much, but Tobey Maguire was a little bit better, but Andrew Garfield did just fine. But Tom Holland is killing it. He's killing it. He's just doing everything right. I liked the Iron Spider suit for what it allowed to happen in the movie, but I'm with you guys that I don't want it to continue. When we get back on and Spider-Man is back in New York City doing his stuff, I don't want him to have that. I know he needed it because that allowed him to maintain whatever he needed to survive in the atmosphere that was going away, and it allowed him to not get sucked out like the Alien movie. Great. But take it away from him. Make it break. Have something happen. I don't want him to have that going forward. It served its purpose. Now let's take it away from it.
Our favorite group of morons are prominently displayed in the, and Thor had one of the best lines of the movie. He says, "I bid you farewell and good luck, morons." Ryan, the Guardians are funny. They're just functional, but always entertaining. I mean, the Guardians find Thor floating in space, but do our group of well-meaning morons work collectively with the rest of the heroes, or do you think they're better in a solo movie on their own?
I think they're such a unique group of characters that the interacting with other characters is brilliant. I loved my favorite parts were Star-Lord's insecurities, and it's so something that his character would do that it worked really, really well. And Thor's interaction with them is great. And Drax. Like, you know, I love how Drax and Thor are kind of two sides of the same coin. Like, they're both oblivious, but Drax is kind of he seems just so well-meaning and kind-hearted and oblivious, where Thor is like a god. So he's obviously arrogant like a god. And, you know, I love how, you know, I love Rocket and Groot with Thor. I think that their characters are so interesting and unique that they work well with any characters. I do think that as a group, they probably don't play well with others. And we saw that clearly, that there are times where they can be problematic, especially with Star-Lord and his own ego. But I think, you know, in a movie like this, you know, it's great to see their interactions. It was great to see Star-Lord. Well, you know, he's just so antagonistic towards everybody, even with him and Tony. It was great at times. So yeah, I definitely think that they're so unique that they play off well with anybody, and I'm glad to see them. But at the same time, they don't seem to play very well with others.
Well, Drax is absolutely hilarious in that stuff. I mean, it's like calling Star-Lord a boy and Thor is a man. No, that's a man. You're a dude. That's a man.
That's amazing. Drax is ginormous and jacked and a bodybuilder himself. And this, the way he like says that is just so, it's so funny. And he's so, I mean, he was made kind of the way that Ryan Reynolds was made for Deadpool. Like Batista was made for this character. He's just, it's perfect.
Looks like a pirate and an angel made love. Goodbye, pirate angel.
I loved everything about that encounter. I just, from start to finish, it was probably the highlight of the movie.
I could have watched a movie, an entire movie of just them on that, on their ship, just bantering back and forth with Thor. That would have been that, if that was Infinity War, it would have gotten a 10 for me.
What kills me about the Guardians too is that they're all kind of funny in their own way. And then you add Mantis to it. And I love Drax's disdain for Mantis after she blows the whole I'm invisible thing. She's like, oh, hey, Drax. And he just kind of grumbles and marches off. Just great interaction, great writing. I mean, we got to give it up for James Gunn. I mean, the guy has done so much. That could have been a mess. It could have looked like a third-rate Star Wars, and it's just done so well. And Rocket and Groot seem like they're, once again with the CGI, they seem like they're actual human beings running around on the screen. Like they're alive. They're real. I love it.
You did get your wish with the. With the no more baby Groot, we got teenage Groot now. So you did get that.
Well, that's it. The other thing is, like, consider that you've got a talking raccoon and a tree, and they're some of the most well developed characters in this entire movie. When you really think about it, the characterization is so strong, and they're so layered and kind of nuanced as characters. It's absolutely insane that a talking raccoon and a freaking tree are
a tree
good.
That only says three words.
Exactly.
Right. There are three words in there, I and am and Groot.
I love the fact too that he had to take a leak and they told him to do it in the cup and throw it out the window. Come on. You don't get any better than that. IG Scarlet Witch and Vision run into a little bit of trouble and there's a great skirmish. I think they're in Scotland. I think they're in Scotland between Coruscant and Proxima Midnight. And then we get our first look at the Secret Avengers, Cap leading the way in full Nomad gear. I mean, there was two instances in this movie where I completely just fanboyed out. And one of them was when Cap came out of the shadows and caught the spear. What did you think about that entrance? And what did you think about how the Secret Avengers worked together as a group?
Okay, like my jaw dropped literally in the theater when he caught that spear. I'm like, first thought was, who the fuck is there? And then he stepped out. I'm like, oh, Jesus. I was so amped up and just excited right then. And it's like, I think we forget that while he's not like a superhuman thing, right? He is basically enhanced to the limit of human capability. That human capability is still pretty darn strong. And his reactions and reaction time to catch a spear thrown by Proxima Midnight. I mean, you've got to be some kind of pretty awesome guy to do that. And I was so excited, and seeing him in the Nomad gear. Oh, I was so joyed for that. I mean, I knew he was going to be in the movie. I knew he was going to have a beard. I just thought that like the first time we were going to see him was going to be in Wakanda. He was going to come in late. They were going to give him a shield. Instead, we get him here, and we get him with Falcon, and we get him with Scarlet Witch is already there, and we get him with Black Widow. I dug it. It got so excited, and it worked. One of the things they did is whenever they brought a character back into this movie, it just tended to work, and I'm really happy with it.
I loved how balanced the movie was. That was one of the things that surprised me the most, because I thought this was going to be a complete cluster F from start to finish with this many characters, and I thought they did manage screen time well. I thought they evened it out and balanced it out and made some really interesting pairings where we're getting a little bit old, a little bit of new, and it worked really well. Ryan, let me ask you a serious question for a second. Thanos, the man who only wants to wipe out half the universe indiscriminately, states that he's relieving stress on the finite resources of the galaxy. We may not be a fan of his methods, but is he wrong? Will overpopulation be our undoing?
That bugged me a little. Like his motivation is a little sketchy. Like even if you take his own personal, like, you can take his personal situation, which is, all right, he lived on a planet where that did happen, and so he sees it as his responsibility to do that everywhere. You know, I think if he's as smart as he's supposed to be, he would know that not every planet, you know, is lacking in the resources, or not every planet has the amount of people. And the other thing is, if you have, if by getting all the Infinity Stones, you can wipe everyone out, surely you can create more resources or somehow bring resource, you know, make sure that things are better. So it's kind of like, feel like that's an extreme move when maybe there are a couple steps you could have gone along the way before that. So, you know, if he knew for sure that the resources were running out and that was the only way to save people, fine. And, you know, maybe if it was, you know, if you had a movie, let's say, where it was not a galactic or universal thing, but a planetary thing, maybe, you know, maybe it's on Earth and we're overpopulated and somebody can do that. Okay, fine. I get it. But to, you know, how does he have the knowledge of what's going on everywhere in the galaxy, you know, or in the universe to know that he needs to do that? I think that bothers me a little bit and is a little weak, shallow as far as, you know, motivation is concerned. I think I need more reason, especially for someone who's supposed to be so smart. You know, I would expect more before just wiping out half the sentient beings in the world or in the universe.
His methods are at least a little more fair than Ted Turner, because he wants it based on what you make per year. You know, if you're on the lower income bracket, you can go. IG, I've seen you be a mad gamer, a mad father, a mad TSA agent, a mad soldier, but you've never been a mad Titan. Thanos takes Gamora on a one-way family vacation, possibly the worst vacation ever. Is it possible to say you love something and then kill it for the greater good?
Well, you must really believe in the greater good. The thing is, I bought it. I bought that's what he felt. And that's one of the things that they are able to do with CGI that they couldn't do before. They can instill real emotion in a character. So I believe that's what he felt he had to do, and that he did absolutely love Gamora. But yeah, what a shitty way to do that. Could I have done that? Like, if I'm the mad Titan? No. I mean, even as a mad TSA agent, all I wanted to do was take away your pocket knife. I didn't want to do anything else to you. But wow. I mean, that was one of the heartbreaking moments in the movie, that he believed so strongly that the one thing, and there so far, that's all I've seen, the one thing that Thanos loved was Gamora. Because, I mean, he had the other child that he adopted, too. He didn't care about that one. He didn't care about Nebula nearly as much as Gamora. Gamora was everything to him, and he still threw her off a cliff.
Yeah, that scene works really well, and the emotional beats between Thanos and Gamora sell the movie and sell his pain and sell her pain in a way that you know, if we don't get that, I think it would take a lot away from the movie, because I think it makes him less of just this evil, you know, mustache twirling villain that we often get in the MCU. And again, we're getting another guy who wants to kill, you know, that trillions of people, but he seems to have a noble reason, and he seems to care about someone. And I think, you know, it's one of the few situations where somebody actually chose their own ideals over the love of, you know, an individual, which is interesting that he was successful because he did do that, whereas a lot of other people in this movie were unsuccessful because they chose an individual over the greater good.
The Avengers rush Vision to Wakanda to remove the Mind Stone so they can destroy it before Thanos can get his hands on it. Ryan, did you hear the cash registers start ringing the second the Wakanda theme song started playing? And do you think James Cameron should be praying for Wakanda fatigue rather than Avengers fatigue?
But yes, I did hear I definitely heard the cash. You could definitely feel, even in the theater, I could kind of feel like, you know, everyone getting a little bit excited, everyone kind of sitting up a little bit. Oh, we're in Wakanda again. And I think with some of the stuff that happens at the end, it's like, wait a second, this is our cash cow. This can't happen. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they talk. Tie things up, because yeah, we know, you know, I think especially once we're done with you know, the next movie, Black Panther and Wakanda will be very prominent in the MCU, and so they got some moves to make leading up to that.
Well, IG, if I told you 5 years ago that the two sides of the MCU, the biggest portions of the MCU would be New York City, as usual in the comics, it's always New York City. But then I told you a country in Africa was going to be the other side. Would you have believed it?
No. 5 years ago? No. Before Civil War, because that was 4 years ago, right? Civil War. Before Civil War, Black Panther was big in that, and he did really well. And that made me believe that there could be some credence to it's not just going to be here. Because, I mean, nothing has been going on in Europe where anything is big there. Nothing has been going on in Asia. It's really been the United States and mostly New York City, you know, and then we get a little bit of Wakanda, and that was actually pretty awesome. But no, I thought if anything, it's going to be more celestial places like Asgard and the places that the Guardians were going. That's where I thought everything was headed. And that's where the things are going to happen. I thought maybe they, rather than going Infinity War, they were going to go Secret Wars and get even more heroes involved and stuff. But that being said, I can't be happier with what they're doing. Wakanda as a location for all this is amazing. And the actors that they get to portray the Wakandans are amazing. I mean, everything that they're doing there, and I know it's a made up place. I understand that. But they've done it so well. And, you know, they're using actual language from Africa and everything, and the scenery is a lot of it actually shot in places in Africa. I get it, and I think it's amazing that for some people this is probably expanding their mind a little bit, because not everything is superheroes in it. There's other things going on, and I'm hoping that it's showing some of the youth today that are going to see these movies that the world is a much bigger place. So I'm super happy that it's ended up that way. But I did not see it coming 5 years ago. That is for sure.
Well, also, I mean, as big of a star as Chadwick Boseman is in the process of becoming, our good friend from The Walking Dead, Danai, had some of the best lines of the movie and was prominently displayed in huge comic relief. She's almost the number two person there. Were you surprised how much or how well she was portrayed on screen?
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I wonder how much of the extra footage, like, you know, I'm sure they should probably shoot so much. And I wonder how much they went back and were like, you know, all right, let's include, because I don't think they did reshoots after the success of Black Panther. So I'm wondering how much they went back into the kind of cutting room floor and said, all right, let's get some more of her in it because she's great. And we knew that. We've known that for a long time. And, I would have liked to see a little more Shuri, actually. And I do think that they didn't, you know, I don't think kind of T'Challa got some of the lines that maybe I would have liked him to get, and maybe some been featured as prominently. So it's kind of like he didn't get featured as prominently as I would have liked, but the other characters did, and kind of Wakanda did. So, you know, all in all, it worked out, and you can definitely feel that that Marvel knows that this is the cash cow, and they're gonna run with it.
Well, if we don't fix what happened at the end of the movie right away, would it, because it happens in the comics, would it not be great to see his sister take on the Black Panther monarch, go grab a one of the Undying Roots and become Black Panther?
Absolutely, that'd be great. But I think we need another movie or so with Chadwick to kind of set that up, because I think, you know, we kind of if Black Panther was kind of about T'Challa really becoming king and understanding what it is to be king, I think we got to see him be a king for at least a movie before we get to, you know, his sister taking over, which I'd love to see. I think she was the breakout character, you know, of that movie. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, she and Danai were so great that Michael B. Jordan, that Chadwick, as great as he is, kind of got pushed down to, like, you know, fourth, you know, as far as who was the most engaging in that movie. So actually, you know what? What's his name? M'Baku. He could arguably be fourth too. So he might be down to fifth as far as, like, the most engaging characters in that movie. So I'd love to see her take the mantle, but I want to see him at least one movie, you know, really establishing him as a ruler before we kind of go there.
But it would be cool before they reset things, if she's still alive, she made it, because they didn't really show it. In the meantime, if she runs and grabs a suit and a root and off she goes to help fight Thanos with everybody else, I think that would be amazing. And I think it would only up her stock as a character. IG, Thor, Rocket Rabbit, and Groot head to the forge to make Thor's new weapon, which happens to be closed down and there's only one person alive. Is Stormbreaker what Thor needs to get his groove back? I mean, does this put him back in the running, or would you prefer that they just stayed with his old lightning powers that they kind of showed in Ragnarok? And has Game of Thrones ruined Peter Dinklage's career? Because no matter what you see him in now, he's got to be Tyrion Lannister.
He almost was Tyrion Lannister there on that dwarf star. But it was still pretty awesome. I'm hoping what happens, and this is a long shot, and it's all based on comic things, right? He has Stormbreaker, but Stormbreaker in the comics traditionally is Beta Ray Bill's weapon. So I'm hoping that with whatever retcon, time stone, spin things back happens, somehow he gets Mjolnir back and Beta Ray Bill comes and gets Stormbreaker. I'm hoping. I don't think that just on his lightning power alone that Thor can be Thor. I think he needs a hammer. It's like Iron Man needs a suit. Spider-Man needs to shoot webs. Thor needs a hammer. It just has to be that way. But the process by which they went through to make Stormbreaker, I really enjoyed that. And I thought it was pretty cool.
So actually, I thought that was the most tedious part of the movie for me. I loved any moment with Thor, Rocket and Groot was great, but yeah, definitely seeing Tyrion Lannister took me out of it. Using his bad English accent kind of took me out of it. The kind of, you know, it was a wink and a nod to the audience also, like, yeah, we all know he's a dwarf, but look, he's a giant. Like, that was just, it was too much. And that one scene took me out of it, and it was a little too long. And I feel like, you know, in a movie where there were so many things going on in so many different places, while it was, you know, the idea was really cool. I just don't think it played out as well as it could have. But more than that, I think there was just so much other things going on that was maybe the one point where I was just like, all right, let's just get this over with. Get get your weapon and get out of there, because I this is just too much.
Well, outside of Captain America's shield, which I didn't love. I didn't love the new, I like the old shield much better. I do love Stormbreaker. I think it's great. I think it's great that Thor can move around the cosmos now, as far as channeling the Bifrost. This kind of missed the mark for me a little bit. I understand what they were trying to do. They're trying to show the suffering of the last dwarf who made the gauntlet. And I just don't think Peter was right for the part. It did take me out of it a little bit too. And it was slightly too long because we were just starting to ramp up everything that was happening. I kind of agree with you there, Ryan. I wasn't in love with the scene, although it did show the perseverance of Thor, how badly he wanted this weapon to make. And another, mark out moment is that the handle Stormbreaker is Groot, which I think is freaking amazing. I couldn't have been happier with the way that worked out. I did enjoy that portion of it.
Yeah, the weapon is great, and I did love that part of it. And I think there's a world where that scene is a good deal shorter, and it works out great. I just think the combination of Peter Dinklage just being, taking me out of it, and then just the length of it, with everything else that was going on, was too much. That scene works in another movie, in another situation where it's just a Thor movie, and that's part of his journey. But the fact that there were so many other things going on at that point, and yeah, you're right, like the story is ramping up. It was just, all right, let's just get to it. I think it's great. I love the weapon, I love the design, I love his use of it, and I love that Groot's part of it. But yeah, just a little too much.
Do you think maybe if they put it earlier in this movie, it might have worked better? Because maybe it's just we had gotten so far and so many things had already happened that it just seemed like it was a step away from everything that was going on. Maybe they just put it earlier, even in this movie, it might have done better. I liked it, but, I'm also the one advocating for let's see him make windmills on The Walking Dead. So, I mean, maybe it's just that part of me that's like, oh, that's exciting. Look, they figured out how to make plumbing. Yay!
I'll do you one better. Why is Gamora? Did that brief misunderstanding, the slight little skirmish between the Guardians, Stark, Strange, and Spider-Man, feel like it was taken directly out of a comic book?
The things that they're doing right here is that there is enough stuff written to make it more current, because a lot of these comics are pretty old, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. Like, I think the Infinity War stuff was in the 80s. If you kept it all then, right, you'd lose a lot of audience because the language usage was different. So they've done a lot of things where they write things for now so that it makes more sense, which works, right? The comic back and forth that you get with Robert Downey Jr. everywhere he goes, it works. But they draw so much from the comics that older comic lovers like you and I, we just get all excited because that stuff comes almost directly out of a comic page, and it's how they relate emotion without being able to draw facial expressions the way that they can emulate them on a screen.
We learned two things during the battle on Titan. Star-Lord is actually an amazing strategist. I mean, they come within inches of defeating Thanos, but we also learned that he's a terrible battlefield general as far as his emotional outbursts and immaturity basically cost half of the universe their life. IG, your thought on the team effort? I mean, they almost took him down, but Star-Lord's inability to hold it together cost them everything.
Well, I love the battle. I loved the plan. I loved how things were working. And you know what? There had to be a moment of weakness. There really did. And because if it would have ended there, where do we get Infinity War 2? You know, whatever they're going to call it, where do we get it? You can't win then. But all of that just lends more credence to that's what makes the Marvel movies great, is that all these characters are human, and humans, as we all know, are prone to error. And even if it's an emotional error and you can't overcome your emotions in a moment like that, because it is just too much pain, that's what makes this all believable. That's what makes this all work so well. I mean, and that's happened in many of the Marvel movies where they get to that moment and you could see it end right there, but there's the struggle, and that's what makes it great. You know, I mean, and that's what really makes most movies great. I mean, if you look at what would be considered many of the greatest movies of all time, it's the humanity of things that make them great. And, you know, to take a superhero property and do the same kind of thing, I think that there's a lot of bias toward these kind of movies that they would never get like best actor nominations or best movie nominations at the Academy level. But there is no reason why they shouldn't, because, you know, the ability to portray humanity in characters that are superhuman takes a special kind of thing. And so, yeah, although it could have been all over there and everything wonderful, but it needed to progress and they did the right way with it.
Ryan, during the pre-battle, Strange looks at 14 million possible outcomes through extended timeline. They only win one. Was that scenario so Tony Stark dependent that caused him to give up the time stone and spare Stark's life?
Yeah, that seems to be a bit of foreshadowing, because I think this is one situation where, you know, there was no love lost for Tony, and I think he made it clear that he would protect the time stone over Tony. So it seems as if whatever happens in that one scenario where they're successful, they need Tony Stark, and that, you know, pretty clearly seems to be the reason why he makes that decision.
And I think maybe he needs the time stone, which makes that decision. So not only do you need Tony, but Thanos has to have the time stone in order to have them win. So I think it's all part of that. Cause if Tony dies and he keeps the time stone and Tony stays dead, but they don't win, you know, then you keep the time stone. But I think all of that lends into he needs to give up the time stone, save Tony. It's all part of the only way to win.
Ryan, with our heroes with their back up against the wall, Thor comes in and makes a dramatic save with his brand new eye, which unfortunately came out of Rocket's butt, his brand new weapon, and turns the tide of the battle. It even nearly gets a fatal blow on the Mad Titan if he would have went for the head. Based on Thor's performance in this movie, do you want to see more Thor movies, and how far do you think they should extend the character out?
I definitely want to see another Thor. Well, okay, I never get the director's name. Is Taika Waititi? Is the director of Ragnarok? Yeah. I want to see another Thor movie if it's directed by him. Only because I love Chris Hemsworth as Thor. And even in the first two, you know, one of the saving graces is that he does a great job as Thor. So he's great in the role. And but I just don't think, I think when the movies take him too seriously, it just doesn't work. And so I love that. So I think I want that combination. But also just with the group that he has around him, I think, you know, I would be happy to see another one, or I'd be happy to see him, be in the next Infinity War movie, you know, and just kind of a guy who shows up in the big team up. So either way, I hope that he's not done as Thor, because I think I'm really, over the last few movies, I'm really enjoying his character more. And I think he's having fun with it. And I think you can tell that he's having a lot more fun with his character than he did the first few times around.
IG, the snap felt around the world. Thanos defeats the hero, finishes his bedazzled gauntlet, despite taking a shot from Thor, and heroes start to turn into ash. We lose Strange, Spider-Man, Bucky, Falcon, Black Panther, and even most of the Guardians. Do you feel these deaths are permanent, or do you think they'll be undone in the next movie somehow?
I think pretty much all those deaths will be undone, but some of them might be redone by the end of the second one. So while I think everyone will come back, not everyone in the whole movie that died, because I think like Heimdall and Loki, they're done. They're not coming back. I think even maybe Gamora, although they might go back far enough to get Gamora back. And I hope so, because I really enjoy her character, especially in the Guardians movies. And we know we're getting another one of those. I don't think Mantis is strong enough to take Gamora's role. And I don't see Nebula in Gamora's role. So I'm hoping that they bring Gamora back. But if they don't, I understand why. But most of them will come back. But I don't think all of them make it through the next one.
Say the ones not ashed out, say they are permanent. Ryan, which franchise took the biggest hit, Guardians or Thor?
I think Thor. So I think with Guardians, Gamora is great. And she's great in the role. And she generally is kind of like the straight man to the group of buffoons. You know, really, it's like, you know, it's like if this is a comedy, she's the straight man, a straight woman, you know, dealing with all these insane, weird characters. So I don't think that anyone can replace her as a character, but there's a strong enough ensemble there that, you know, I don't know that she'll be missed as much. I think that with Thor, you lose, you know, Loki, as Ig said, and I tend to agree, I think Loki has done so much. I don't know that we need him. I think he's done as much as he's going to do. But you're losing two heavyweights with Tom Hiddleston and Idris Elba. And I think Idris Elba has been underused in these movies. And I'd love to see him get a little bit more of a prominent role. So I think that losing two just massive kind of heavyweight hitters who can put on, you know, phenomenal performances, I think that's a little bit tougher of a loss than Gamora, because you know, there's enough of an ensemble there to kind of distract you, even though, again, she's strong and she's a great actress and she's really perfect for that role.
Idris Elba wasn't going to return to the Thor franchise until he saw the last script and he loved it. So, yeah, I believe he was underutilized extremely. I think personally, I think Guardians took a bigger hit only because Gamora keeps the team on the track. She keeps it on rails, and it even showed it when they were headed to the distress signal. Those guys wanted to rob the ship and take their money, and she kind of kept giving Peter looks and brought him back to where he should be, keeping him on the straight and narrow. I believe that a lot of these deaths will be undone, but I think we're going to see a lot more, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, to kind of balance it out. Ryan, where does the MCU head from here? Your thoughts on the movie and your rating.
So I think this is a bit of a tough movie to judge because it relies really heavily on, you know, what preceded it and, you know, what's to follow. And I think that it's fine. Like it's not a, you know, it doesn't take away from my experience because this is a culmination of 10 years, you know, and 20 movies almost. But it still kind of it feels somewhat incomplete for me. So like, if you just look at it through the lens of it being the capper of 10 years, I think it's great. You know, it does an amazing job of taking all these characters that we know and we love and kind of putting them together in a way that, as I said earlier, is really surprisingly cohesive and it doesn't feel forced. And I love the pairings. I love most of the groupings. I think they really make the most of their time together. I think Thanos, Josh Brolin is the star of this movie with, you know, again, Thor being a close second, but I think he delivers an amazing performance and outside of maybe Killmonger is the best MCU villain we've gotten to date. You know, I think his backstory and his motivations were lacking, but his performance and the beats with Gamora really make this movie work for me. You know, the other thing I think the humor in this movie is great. You know, unlike some other movies, even Ragnarok, which I loved, Justice League, which I didn't love so much, and Last Jedi, which I loved. I'm just thinking of three similar movies that came out recently. They all had humor, but the humor was very forced. And even when the humor worked, it still felt forced. The humor in this felt organic. I mean, it just nothing ever felt like, oh, they just threw that joke in there. It just was weaved into the plot. And I think that really worked well for me. You know, the ending was bold and subversive and a shock, but I think I'm a little afraid that they're going to retcon everything. And that just, to me, removes a lot of the stakes. And, you know, so I think that was the good of the movie. I think I did have some issues with it. You know, the CGI and the action were fine, but it wasn't mind blowing. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't better than anything we've already seen on the screen. I had some issues with the pacing of the movie, which is to be expected when you're dealing with that many characters. And, you know, I, as I mentioned before, like, I don't quite get people's powers, and I don't understand why, you know, humans are besting characters that Scarlet Witch can't best. And, you know, while I understand that this is like a standalone movie, I felt like there was a better way to do service to the stories from before, but still kind of make it stand on its own. And I just, I don't feel like it stands on its own as its own movie. It just owes too much plot and character development to previous movies and future movies. And I think when you compare this to like Spider-Man Homecoming and Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther, which all came out within the last year, I think those movies are stronger as a whole. And so when I'm grading this, I just can't give it a higher rating than those three movies, because I think they're just more complete movies. And I think, you know, another issue I had is that this movie really relies on action and exposition, but it doesn't really allow a plot to grow organically from the movie. So while I really enjoy the movie, I'm going to give it an 8. You know, if you're just looking at it as like the capstone to what we've had, you know, I could easily give it a 9, but I think as an overall movie, I just have a hard time giving it anything more than an 8, because I just think there's just something missing there. You know, still an achievement, all things considered, but I think there's just something a little bit missing that stops me from giving it a 9 or higher. Oh, sorry. One more thing. So moving forward, I'll just quickly say, I think that, you know, I think obviously all these deaths are going to get retconned. I do hope that we get a movie that's not as Thanos-centric and we get something that we're not expecting. But I do think that we're going to end up retconning a lot of this, which to me takes a little bit away from the boldness of the move. But obviously, if it's a financial move, you can't kill off Black Panther and Spider-Man and everybody else. So I get it. But that's my expectation for next year.
Really, the only people that would be happy about that move would be DC, because then maybe they have a shot of catching up. Marvel is on a run. The last 4 or 5 movies have just been amazing, and they just keep getting better and better, which really sets the bar high for Ant-Man and Wasp coming, and I think that's going to fall a little bit short. That being said, the humor worked. The drama worked. Even the slowest part of the movie, Thor making Stormbreaker, had merit. It had value to me. This, without a doubt, is probably one of my top 3 movies that aren't Star Wars of all time. The pairings were great. The comedy was great. Visually, it worked. I loved some of the aspects of the new uniforms. The deaths were painful. The meetings were great. Everything just fell into place the right way. Hats off to the Russo brothers, because this is an achievement. This movie has broken all kinds of records, and I hope to see it land somewhere between the top 2 or 3 movies of all time as far as box office take, because Disney really laid it out there for this. It's being rumored that they've spent $1 billion between this movie and the next, so it needs to have a huge return for the Marvel MCU to keep going the way it is. I don't know how you top this movie. I can't wait to see the next thing, and I agree with Ryan and it's hard to kill these characters and just bring them back like it never happened. But I have a feeling that the other deaths will kind of even out the losses. We're going to lose some people. It's going to be like a big death scene at The Walking Dead. We're all going to need a little bit of time to mourn the end of characters like Tony and Steve, people that have been around in our lives for a long time. But the casting is amazing, and I frankly love the movie. I'm going to throw it out there. I'm giving this movie a 10.
I love that they did everything that they could with this movie, because it was funny. It was exciting. It was emotional. I mean, I can't tell you how much emotion I felt when Spider-Man began turning to ash and he was holding on to Tony going, I don't want to go, Mr. Stark. I'm scared. And it just hit me right in the feels so hard. And that's the kind of stuff that they've been able to do in the MCU. And they did it really well in this movie. Were there some pacing problems? Yeah. But I mean, I have yet to see kind of any movie that at some point doesn't have a little bit of pacing issue. Was there a lack of character development? Probably, but you know, who is going to see this movie that doesn't know who most of these characters are? Sure, you might not know Scarlet Witch and Vision all that well, but they aren't really all that close to their comic characters here anyway. They're more MCU-created characters. Yes, they have origins somewhere else, but they're not displayed here like they were in the comics. there's plenty of things here to love. And the thing is they do make a movie that hits on all sides. You don't necessarily have to be a comic book fan to enjoy it. And that's what Marvel has done. In the 10 years preceding this, they've made a bunch of movies that whether or not you like comic books, you'll like these movies because they are just in general pretty good movies. There have been some misses. I think the first Avenger wasn't as great as it could have been. Obviously, the second Thor movie, The Dark World, was awful in comparison to the other Marvel movies. Still right up there among the top if you compare it with the DC movies, but I'll back off of banging on DC for right now. I really did enjoy it. I had a good time. It is still my number two Marvel movie. I still think Black Panther's a better movie, a more complete movie, and a better character-driven movie. That being said, I'm still going to give this a 9. I really did enjoy it, and I'm going to see it minimum 3 more times. I really did enjoy it, and I think that everyone ought to go out and give it a look because you're going to have a good time. Definite popcorn-eating good time. And that's going to do it for the Cynic Radio Podcast review of Marvel's Infinity War. We had a great time bringing it to you. I'm Igrahi. With me have been the uncanny Cynic and the invincible Ryan. Continue to share this with all your family and friends. Thank you for all the support we've gotten so far. Continue to send us all your comments, questions, and concerns to cynicradio@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cynicradio. Look for us on Twitter at cynicradio. You can even find us on Instagram at cynicradio. And until next time, don't get captured.
Follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and at cynicradio.com. Available for download on iTunes.
Oh, I'm Korg. I'm made of rocks. Oh my god, the hammer pulled you off.